America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It is Dukes and Bell. We're getting ready for Falcons and Bucks tomorrow night. Braves tonight. Tony Gwynn Jr. is going to join us in about 20 minutes. We got to discuss this here real quick, Mike and I, because I know some of you feel like, at least Falcon fans and people that listen to us every day, and we're glad that you do, that maybe we're making a bigger deal out of this pitch thing. And when I say I hope you listen every day, then that would mean that you know throughout the course of the summer, I was hitting on this nonstop about how important I thought he needed to be in this offense. And then we get to the season. And this has become not just an Atlanta story, it's an NFL story. Because everybody is saying, okay, wait a minute, maybe they got this wrong with this guy, mm-hmm. because now we're in the fourth season, his fifth-year option has been picked up, the production is still not there. And so I just want to be clear here. This is not us, again, solely going in on this. But people around the league are paying attention, Mike, and they're saying, something's wrong right there in Atlanta with this situation.
Hey, guys, we're 23rd in the league in scoring points. You know, we brought Kirk Cousins in to be a dynamic offense. I mean, I wasn't being a Weisenheimer. I said, can this offense ever get to those heights? Like, 16 was one for the record books with Shanahan. That's why Shanahan got the job with the 49ers. But we didn't come here and bring Kirk Cousins in here to look pedestrian on offense.
No.
There's an article, and we're going to get him on. I think Chris is reaching out to James Dater, who writes for SB Nation. We just had Josh Kendall on, who did more of the stats on Pitts. This is more of a schematic breakdown. And in a nutshell, I just put the link up, Carl, Mike Bell, ATL. Follow us. And put him up, C Dukes, as well. And you can interact. It's just basically saying, and this is why you and I used to ask Arthur Smith all the time, if he can't block, why don't you stop trying to get him to block? You know, and that's part of the problem the first 3 years of Pitts. And then they would throw an injury in there. And basically what the article says, now with Zach Robinson, if you look at the Rams and Higby, their old tight end, they don't really run the tight end on long routes. And if you notice with Pitts, he's kind of a car that takes a little bit of the low gear, takes a second to kick in before he gets to his gate when he's down the field. So we're not using him the right way. His route running is brutal. That's on Kyle Pitts. It's something that people have danced around in this organization. Nobody wants to come out and say it, but everybody knows it. Pitts does not run good routes. And Zach Robinson kind of like gave you a hint today, answering his question to the media.
Attention to detail.
But basically, they're not using him the right way. And when the you brought Arthur Smith in, and you drafted a guy when you had all these options, like Penei Sewell. There's a million things you could have done with the pick. And it just looks like Kyle Pitts may be a star in this league, but it's never going to happen here in Atlanta.
So here's my question, and I just asked the guys this. How does he have 1,000 yards with a quarterback who could deliver the ball in Matt Ryan? Two bums after that, and he was injured. And now we have a legitimate quarterback, and there seems to be a lack of production. Why is that? They've shown you, even when Arthur Smith was here his first year, he's shown you that is what he's capable of. And now it feels like we're so far away from that. So why is that? You've got to be willing to not fit a square peg into a hole, Mike, and just try to fit it in there. You've got to adjust to what guys do well. And so with that said, we're going to see. Two things are going to happen, Mike, course of the season. Kyle Pitts is going to get really productive, and they're going to figure this out. Or he's not. And he's going to be considered a bust. And to your point, he's not going to be here. Right. That's it. There's no more to this. It's that simplistic. And it is up to the guys that call the plays and the guys that design this offense and run this offense to say, hey, we got to figure out a way to get him more involved. And by the way, it's okay if you don't do things great. Nobody does. There's not a receiver out there that's great at everything. But, Mike, right. You've got to figure out what he does well and incorporate that. And I think that is what we're lacking right now, because we can talk about all this other stuff. I agree totally with what they're saying schematically and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I said this yesterday, didn't I? Sometimes you got to go make plays.
Right.
Sometimes, man, that's just like, I got to go get open and throw me the damn ball.
Guy, I said, it's like driving a Ferrari to haul lumber. Guy goes, that's a terrible analogy, Mike. All right. So I changed it. I said, like driving a Ferrari in your cul-de-sac. How's that?
Yeah, that's fair.
That's where, because
where are you going? Running around.
You know what? It's funny. I never ever want to give money for like something like Twitter, but when I did pay for it, because you can edit, because you know, I'll tweet something.
Sure.
And I'm the king of the typos. You know, it's like
I got fat fingers.
It's like a splinter in my brain. At least now I can just go back and re-edit the thing. But no, but that's just it. I mean, at some point, it's a new offensive coordinator comes in, and we don't really have the two classic. I mean, Drake London is the tall guy. He's not super speedy, but he's athletic. We do have guys in Darnell Mooney. We love his speed. And Ray Ray. But we don't really have like the Alvin Harper, Michael Smith kind of, or Michael Irvin kind of thing. So, okay, can't Pitts fill that role? Can't you line Pitts up in what every fan thought it was going to be? He's not going to be asked to block. You know, Tony Gonzalez and Jimmy Grin, these guys couldn't block. They just were super athletic tight ends that created mismatches, which we never do with Pitts.
Yep.
But as you said, Pitts has also got to look at the man in the mirror. He's got to be better at his craft. He's got to be better at his route run.
I'm looking at the man in the mirror. I mean, he's got to do it. All right. We'll see. Tomorrow, hopefully we get more production. This offense scores points, and we can have less of a discussion about this. But 4 weeks in, this is where we are. And I just want to let you guys know, this ain't me and Mike just making this up. Everybody around the league is paying attention to it. With that, let's get to an NFL Blitz! All right, he said he wanted to be traded yesterday. So let's hear from Davante Adams, because, Mike, he says he hasn't heard from his head coach about a trade.
Yeah, I haven't heard from him. I haven't talked to him. So I've been, I don't know. I don't really know exactly what that was about. Obviously, I got, you know, social media is a beast. So it's a lot of people out there that saw it and, wondering what's going on and people reaching out. And yeah, I haven't spoke to him.
I think that's just Antonio Pierce being a dude he is, right? You want to trade? Get your blank up out of here. I don't like that.
It's cool that he has, you know, that sort of like recently played player energy. But sometimes you got to be a little more diplomatic with how you handle your team. You know, already saying, I see some chumps making business decisions. You know, okay. So basically you're calling your guys a bunch of quitters out there and they're not playing with heart. And then, you know, the idea that you're going to like something on social media, that's like high school. Don't like something which saying your star player is going to get traded, because he will find out. And he did.
Yeah.
And now it just seems like it's untenable for Davante Adams. And it's a shame because Minshew's probably exceeded expectations. Yeah. I don't know. It's not obviously the long-term answer in Vegas, but it's not bad.
It's not bad. Let's hear from Davante Adams talking about the chips are going to fall where they fall.
Honestly, it's hard to comment on. Okay. I'm sure you would imagine as such, but it's one of those situations where I just keep my head down and keep doing my thing and let the chips fall where they may as it pertains to that. But I haven't – there's been no communication with anybody from the team since that became a thing. But, you know, it's kind of just like the weekly what's up with Tay thing. Yep. You know, it's always some sort of drama. But at the end of the day, 1-7 doesn't create any of it. So people can say what they want, but I'm just chilling, trying to be the model – for, you know, not stirring the pot and just locking in and doing what I got to do.
Too late.
I've got two choices, and shocking to with his boys, Aaron Rodgers and the Jets and Derek Carr and the Saints. Part of the reason he went to Vegas in the first place was Derek Carr, who got his knees clipped by Josh McDaniels. And then, of course, Carr winds up, you know, in New Orleans. I don't want Davante Adams in this division.
No. I'm with you on that. I don't want to see that. Mike, isn't this a situation the coach calls him into his office and says, look,
let's clear the air.
Yeah.
Like I'm sorry.
Right.
I don't want to trade you. I want you here.
Isn't this that kind of situation?
Yeah. And you got to bite the bullet if you're Antonio Pierce. Better just, you know. Otherwise, you're looking at a longer season. And it's just, you know, it's just silly. It's like becomes a telephone game, and it is a soap opera. But it also does suck that one of the best talents in the league is languishing with a bad offense in Vegas.
Yeah, it does. Hey, man. Let's talk about the Jets. Mike mentioned it. Could he end up there? I want you guys to listen to this. Because I think we kind of found this out when he was in Denver as the head coach. And now he's the offensive coordinator for the Jets. Jets offense hasn't been good. And now you have their star wide receiver questioning the offense. Listen to this, Garrett Wilson.
I don't think we do a lot of different stuff, you know, to be honest. You know, when I watch football on Sundays, I see a lot of teams run and mix it up and stuff like that. I don't feel like we do that. So I think we know our identity is just about going out and executing it.
I don't think we do a lot. Mm. He's talking about Nathaniel Hackett's offense, or is it? Because I think I think that Aaron Rodgers has full autonomy, Mike, to do whatever the hell he wants on that offense and call whatever he wants and change plays. But Nathaniel Hackett carries that title. And you've got the star wide receiver saying, I watch other teams on Sunday. I don't think we do a lot.
Well, I got to be honest. This guy was like the assistant dishwasher to Matt LaFleur with Green Bay. Matt LaFleur's game plan. Look, it is what it is. You put this man in charge of a football team, and it was an unmitigated disaster. I mean, you knew 3 days into his running the Broncos that he couldn't do the job. So now he comes back, and he's in it. And like he's with the Jets.
Just assistant to the dishwasher.
Yes. I mean, you're in the room, right? I mean, he's probably making – so Matt LaFleur is drawing up the game plan while – the Hackett is making neckties out of paper clips because right. I mean, sure as hell wasn't the brains behind the operation.
No, he wasn't, man. I just think when you have these situations this early in the season, it makes you wonder what they are doing offensively.
Right. Huh. Well, it could be worse. You could be the Dolphins. And as we said yesterday, if you missed it, don't know where they're going to go. I guess their only hope is that the medical staff gives Tua the green light, and Tua comes up with, like, the biggest giant dark helmet from Spaceballs, like a noggin, so he doesn't get, you know, another concussion, and he gets back to work because there's really nobody on the horizon that would help you immediately. It's hard to imagine Ryan Tannehill coming back to where he first left because he couldn't do the job in the first place. In Miami would be the rescue guy. They just got no quarterback play. They get Odell Beckham activated, which is great, but he's not a quarterback.
No, I was going to say, can he throw?
You know, so.
That's good. That's funny, man. Hey, NFL Blitz is brought to you by friends of Priority Men's Medical Centers. Check them out at PriorityMen'sMedical.com. Hey, real quick, I got to go back to the Jets because this is awkward as well. I mean, while we're picking on them. Aaron Rodgers on his relationship with the head coach, and then I want you to hear Boomer Esiason, Mike, in New York talk about the relationship between these two guys. So this is Rodgers first. Mm. What's your relationship like with your head coach?
I don't get into what the conversation is going on outside the building around myself, the relationships that I have. The most important ones are looking a guy in the eye in the locker room or in a meeting room and knowing, you know, he's got your back, you get his back. Rob and I have a great relationship. We have since day one when I got here. You know, we have text message conversations, threads that we're in, conversations about a number of different topics outside of football. We got a good friendship. Okay.
Except when he wants to hug.
Dude, two possessions. Get away from me.
Except when he wants to.
Still weird. I mean, I've seen all these lip readers and all these breakdowns of what that was. Still look kind of strange, man.
It is.
When they're beating up on the Patriots.
Boomer Esiason, what do you think their relationship is between Rodgers and Saleh?
I try to watch to see if I see any interactions on the sideline or anything. Nothing. Not that I see a guy walking right past another guy. I can't imagine that. Both will deny it. I guarantee it. But there is an issue there. And it's because you have this 40-year-old Hall of Fame quarterback to be dealing with a coach that I think he doesn't respect.
Oh!
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 Snap. Boomer went there, and Boomer, I think Boomer was right.
Oh!
Yeah, I think. Well, Saleh, we saw in Hard Knocks, he's a little Captain Queeg on the Kane Mutiny. He's wrapped a little tight, you know? I'm not sure this is the best match made in heaven. No, again, last year it was a season in hell, having to go through a world without Aaron Rodgers, and needless to say, nobody could do the job. Zach Wilson is not there anymore. But, yeah, I don't know. Is he the guy? But it's a catch-22 because Nathaniel Hackett's Aaron's boy.
Yeah.
I mean, your offense has got to play better. Defense is doing a pretty good job without Hassan Reddick. That's on the general manager. That's about both guys' pay grade. Right?
I agree. No, listen, it's going to be – here's sorry, Chris. Somebody's getting fired. Somebody's getting fired.
Hey, by the way, we had this discussion about Kyle Pitts. We referenced the SB Nation article. A lot of guys are in this up. You were talking about Pitts was a 1,000-yard receiver. A lot of guys are saying, Carl, look, there was no one else to throw to in 21. Went back, and don't forget, that's the year that we lose Julio. Julio is gone. He goes up to Tennessee, and that's the year that Calvin Ridley flaked out 5 games into the season.
Correct.
So the leading receiver was Alamide Zaccheaus behind Russell Gage. And then Kyle Pitts was the overall leading receiver, became the target, and certainly Arthur pivoted, and Matt used him like a wide receiver that season, albeit for one touchdown.
Yeah,
it hasn't been like that ever since.
No, you got to adjust. And by the way, Alamide Zaccheaus is balling out with the Commanders. For those of you who are like, oh, he's playing really well for them.
Right.
All right, we're coming back. We're going to talk to Tony Gwynn Jr. Maybe we can jinx them a little bit. I doubt it.
Well, let's go get some Joe Boo and let's go get some tequila.
I doubt it. But we're going to talk to Tony Gwynn about this Braves series next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Played out. Were they a team that was going to make the playoffs? If we did, what would it look like? And we knew it would be an uphill battle. So last night, Mike and I were just talking about this. First inning, you have your opportunities. You have chances. And then you left a bunch of guys on base, too, which, again, you leave these ducks on the pond. You can't get them home.
Right.
That becomes an issue. But, you know, tonight we're pinning our hopes on Max Fried. He is a lefty. I told you guys they've struggled a little bit against lefties. We'll talk to you know, our man about that and what that exactly means. But this is it. There is no tomorrow if you do not win tonight.
It is rocky. There is no tomorrow.
There is no tomorrow.
And a guy who's got to be feeling pretty, pretty, pretty good about his Padres is Tony Gwynn Jr. He joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline. What's up, man?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Well,
not good. Not
as
good
as you. all right, just not that this matters now, but if we could have maybe pushed a run across, would it have shook Michael King up a little bit or no? Because he just seemed like he was so stoic and he got in the groove and he was unhittable.
Yeah, no, I think it was going to be a tough day no matter what. He has a tendency to, if you're going to get him, you better get him early because he starts to settle in. And as you guys saw last night, he just gets stronger as that game went on. And if the Padres get a starter that can get through six, it's gonna be an uphill climb for anybody because that bullpen is pretty dirty.
Yeah, it is, and we haven't even had to really see what that looks like in a close game because last night wasn't. Padres win 4-0. They are up in this best of three. Tonight is a must win for the Braves. We're talking with Tony Gwynn Jr. Guys, Tony, talk to me about the makeup of this team. Remember a couple of years ago when I was telling you we had you on and we were talking about what we thought the Padres would be with all the name brands, right? And they went out and spent money, and me and you were like, man, they spent more money. They've never spent money. And now they've got all these big brands, Tatis and, you know, Arise and all these guys. The makeup of this clubhouse and why has it clicked this year? What happened?
I think there's a bunch of things happened. I think a change at the top was good for this particular group of guys with Mike Shield coming in. I think the kind of trials and tribulations of 23, I think changed the mindset of a lot of guys, of this team as a whole. And then I just think you add the pieces that they added. And I think oftentimes we're talking about a guy like Luis Arraez because of how he swings the bat, but he's an incredible clubhouse guy, incredible energy. You get Toddy back, who you really didn't have all the last season. He comes back, and he's back to being his normal self. And so you get a kind of combination of all those things. And I think Mike Shield's probably the biggest one. He kind of came in and he had an attention to detail, the smaller things. You look back at that 23 team, they really struggled with runners in scoring position. They couldn't move guys. Runner on third, less than two outs, couldn't get guys in. They do that at probably the highest level in baseball this year, and I think that's a big reason why you've seen the success offensively that they've had this year.
Yeah, I guess he's kind of an old-school guy because apparently it was like either his way or the highway in St. Louis, but he's definitely found traction in San Diego. Tony Gwynn Jr. is with us, guys, our Odyssey MLB insider. A slow start for the Padres, but then they really got cranked up, and now I guess they feel like they can go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers or anybody.
You know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Braves from, 2 years ago.
Mm.
You know, they were kind of like 500 through the first half, kind of teetering back and forth, and then they caught fire in the second half. It's been very similar. I wouldn't say that they got off to a slow start. I just think when, you know, you're in the kitchen cooking up a certain recipe, it takes some time to kind of develop. And I think all of those things I mentioned in terms of the attention to detail, as you're implementing that as a team, it takes some games for everybody to kind of figure out what their identity is going to be. And Mike Shield talked about that from day one. figuring out what our identity is. And he made the point that, you know, as you're figuring it out, it's going to change. You know, you're going to think it's one way, but as the season gets going, it starts to evolve. And I think that's where the Padres are. And they got hot and came together really at the perfect time.
They're hitting everybody, but they are not hitting lefties as well, right? I mean, that's good for us with Fried going tonight. And, you know, what does that mean as far as this team and the makeup? Is that how you attack them?
I would have said in the earlier part of the season, yeah. I mean, the first 22 games, I think the Padres were something like 9-14 against lefties, hitting .223. In the last 24 against the lefties, Padres have basically flipped that record and been better. The average is up around .250, .260. And so, you know, you add the addition of a guy like Donovan Solano, who just handles righties so well, or excuse me, lefties so well. The Manny Machado getting hot. Like, when that part of the season had taken place, Manny was still battling through his elbow surgery that he had in the offseason. They just hadn't really hit the ground running yet. But I will say this. They saw Max Fried in that slow start early, and he was one of the lefties that they actually beat. So there's some confidence, I think, going into tonight's game.
All right, man. Talk about the dude who's going to be pitching tonight. Let's see. He is 6-5 on the 3.88. Joe Musgrove. What are we going to get from him tonight?
A dog. I mean, this dude is. I don't know if you guys remember the 22 series in New York where it was a closeout game. He went out there and probably threw the best game of his career. I expect that kind of same Joe Musgrove. He after coming off the IL, he kind of got off to a slow start with shoulder injury, but you know, since he's come back, he's been one of the Padres' best pitchers. He's kind of moved away from the good slider that, you know, he's become accustomed to throwing and everybody had come accustomed to seeing, moved to more of a sweeper. He's got the curveball. He's added a few mphs on his fastball. He's throwing the ball as well as he has at any point in the season. So I think the Padres like where they're lined up here tonight.
Tony Gwynn Jr. joining us, telling us why the Padres will win it all. Okay, I'm over-exaggerating. But, but they got a good squad.
We're in a dark place right now, Tony.
We are. Tony, exactly. I said, I think, you tell me what you think. All right, I know you're close to it. But I said, I think they have the best 7, 8, 9 guys in the league. And they use them differently. I mean, it's not always Suarez that closes, but he's damn good. Jason Adam, and then Tanner Scott. You have a system, 7, 8, 9. We can shut teams down. And I said going into this series, that was my fear, is like they've got a plan for 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention a guy like Adrian Mordejon or a guy like Jeremiah Estrada. I mean, their bullpen is deep. And that was probably the most substantial move made at the deadline, bringing in Tanner Scott and bringing in Jason Adam. Because, you know, quite frankly, prior to those guys getting there, it had been tough for Mike Schilt to piece it together to get to Suarez. Once those guys came, not only were you able to bridge it, but now you have reinforcements on the backside should, you know, they not be able to go or should they need a day down. This bullpen is probably the thing that makes most people pick them as a World Series favorite because they have, you know, in the postseason especially, you don't see some starters go as long. I mean, the Padres were fortunate enough last night to have King going, but that's not always the case as you get deeper. And if you have a bullpen that you can lean on, you got a hell of an advantage.
Tony Gwynn Jr. is with us, guys. As this could be, Carl, the last time we'll talk to Tony this year for baseball. On the positive side, T, what do you think about Chris Sale for National League Cy Young Award winner? Because with all the things that happened on this team, he was the guy that just kept on trucking.
Yeah, no, in my opinion, he's the runaway winner with the Cy Young this year. I think the year he's put together, I mean, he very well could be that and the comeback player of the year. All in the same boat. I mean, he's had just a phenomenal. He was one of the lefties the Padres lost to earlier this season. He absolutely that was one of the first games the Padres looked bad offensively. They just could not figure him out, and that was early. But as it turned out, no one could figure him out. So they weren't alone in that from that standpoint. He's just having a phenomenal year. I love seeing guys come back from whatever injury, you know, in his case. And come back and throw the ball so well. It's a joy to watch some of the old dogs come in and throw the ball this well.
I cannot cheer for the Dodgers in any way, shape, or form. So if you guys do win this series, it is all about the Padres.
Yes.
Hey, man, I wanted to ask you. I said to Mike yesterday, last time these two teams met in the playoffs, 1998 in the NLCS. Do you remember that?
Oh, of course I remember. That was our last. That was the Padres' last World Series appearance that year. And
that was a crazy team, wasn't it? They had a 3-0 lead on the Braves. Braves come back. But we were talking about, like, these two teams haven't met, you know, a whole lot. But when they have, it's been big. And that was the last time in 98 NLCS.
Yeah, they finished with 98 wins. They had clinched, like, the first day of September. And they pretty much stopped playing in September and missed out on winning 100. But that was one of the best teams in this franchise history. I mean, that team, the 84 team, and you think about that 98 team, you had guys like Greg Vaughn, you had King Caminiti, you had Andy Ashby on the mound. I mean, there were so many really good, Kevin Brown on that team as well. I mean, they had a squad, and it was probably one of the few times they went into a series against, you know, anybody that they felt like they were the favorites to win.
Yeah. Don't forget the closer in that team,
Trevor Hoffman.
Oh my God!
Yeah, you can't forget Uncle Trevor for sure.
Right. Well, we had the Padres on the run, Carl. It was 3-2, and Bobby's did the whole lefty righty stuff, and Game Six was ugly. We were at the Pink Pony by about the fifth inning, but that's neither here nor there.
That's
Tony.
A strip club, Tony.
Doesn't matter. Forget I said it. All right, Tony. Well, best of luck, kinda. But if you do get to the World Series, we'll have you on again.
It's always good. Man, it's all good to talk to you, brother. Glad you're doing well, and we'll talk soon.
Take care.
That's our man.
Tony Gwynn Jr. And the 84 team, obviously, his pops.
Right.
What? Is it over?
No. It's the solemn sound of hell's bells, which we may need to pray to tonight, or say it if we can actually get the comeback. Oh, hell's bells!
All right,
we beat him. We're coming back to Atlanta.
Let's hope so. Hey guys, yeah, man, no man's on the way. We got a bunch of guests to stop by today. We're just getting started. You're gonna hear from Chris Lindstrom. Barbara Dooley's gonna stop by to talk some dogs. You'll hear from Coach Rye as well. Stay right there. Barbara Dooley's on the way in 20 minutes here on Dukes and Bell. We'll talk about Auburn, which is up next for the Dogs, but what she thought about the Alabama game should be interesting to hear from her. Before we get to Chris, 92.9 The Game is teaming up with support now for the Helene Assists to help those impacted by Hurricane Helene. Join us in supporting the Haywood Schools Foundation by donating today. Head over to 92.9thegame.com and give what you can. All right. With that said, lots more to get to. We'll hear from our head coach, Raheem Morris, as we get ready for Tampa Bay. In the 5 o'clock hour, Andy and Randy had a chance to sit down with him today and talk to him. Chris Lindstrom as well, this offensive line. A little banged up, and we're going to have to block some big boys here with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But listen, you think about the first few games. I mean, Chris Jones, TJ Watt, they've had their fair share of dudes to face.
We're right where we should be, 2-2. But certainly, you know, you talked about that Chiefs game. That's one that we let get away. But we'll talk more about that and hear what Chris Lindstrom had to say as well.
Let's get to Yeah Man, No Man. Turtle, what is going on? Happy Wednesday.
Unseasonably warm outside today, about pushing 80 degrees, gentlemen. I think it might be a good day for a stroll.
Yeah.
Anyway, so everybody really
wants... That's good top-down weather. It was top-down weather today. Yes,
everybody really wants to know why A.J. Smith-Shawver, right?
Why?
You had some options available.
Tell me why.
Ian Anderson. Well, our good buddy C.J. Nitkowski of the Braves broadcast went on the very popular MLB show Foul Territory. I forget which one it's called. Foul Territory. And he explained the Braves' decision.
So you have basically three guys that you were choosing from. Bryce Elder, who was an all-star last year and has some really big moments for this team. Now, this past season, he wasn't nearly as consistent, but he still had some games. Then you get A.J. Smith-Shawver, who's got the bigger arm. And you saw some of that velocity yesterday. And I think in the case of Ian Anderson, and based on what Snit said, the one thing that probably concerned them is that he had not been in a big league environment since 2022, right? So it has been a long time. Those are your three options. And then, of course, as you guys well know, then you go and you dig in and you look at this really deep lineup. that they have in San Diego and try to figure out whose stuff do you think would play best in the moment, then factor in all those other things that we have talked about where guys are. And ultimately, they landed on A.J. Smith-Shawver with the idea, I'm guessing here, but probably, can you get us through the order one time? Right? Can you get us through the order and keep us in this game? And he nearly did. Obviously, Tatis got a hold of one that was right down the middle, and that's a tough spot to be put in for a young kid who pitched, you know, what, four and change innings this year at the big league level. So,
yeah, and that's the argument because, you know, Ian Anderson, you know, yeah, he's right. Hadn't pitched there in 2 years, but all you had was a cup of coffee, was a couple of innings against the Cubbies for Shawver.
Yeah, I get the whole layout there. He did a great job of basically explaining what they had an option to do. Does any of those make you feel any better?
No. It was probably the pick your poison. It was either one. There was going to be some risk, and there was certainly the odds were stacked against, no matter who you rolled out there. Yeah. Not being able to roll out Chris Sale, Max Fried, or Ronaldo Lopez.
And that's part of this decision is, okay, we go with what we think is the best. He said it. Can they get us through the lineup? Once, maybe twice, if so, great. But none of that makes me feel any better if you said, hey, here are your choices going into a three-game set, and it's game one where you're missing your number one guy.
A couple of guys said, what about Schwellenbach? And he's got a short rest. Could he go? I don't know. See, I just – those were things you used to get all the time. I mean, you know, I get it. Sandy Koufax won't pick on 2 days rest. That doesn't happen anymore. But a lot of folks, I think, were looking to maybe have a little more creativity and maybe try to cobble something together. But then if that doesn't work and you continue to advance, you're just kind of kicking the can down the road because where are you going to get your innings from, right? You're correct. Still going to probably burn through your bullpen.
You are. And that was the fear. I'm not disrespecting any of those guys. I'm just saying from a Braves fan standpoint, that layout of those three guys on a big
board.
There
were no good options.
That's it.
And I think the nail in the coffin was – we all kind of saw that coming, right? Like, I think Joe Fan out there.
Wait a minute. I didn't see it coming. I didn't see. I needed Chris Sale is what I needed. Yeah. I didn't see that coming.
You thought AJ was going to go out there and shove?
No. I'm saying I didn't see the whole Chris Sale thing. If Chris Sale's available, we're not even having this conversation.
No, I'm saying I think once AJ Smith-Shawver was announced, I think everybody kind of saw that this was going to be more likely than not the result.
Only the most diehard Braves fan felt confident. No, nobody. I don't know anybody who had confidence about this going into it.
I had my fingers crossed.
That's it. That's all you can do.
The eternal optimist.
Hope is a good thing, Red. Maybe the best thing.
Well, I said a prayer, too. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and lie. I burned a couple of things. Yeah. Right. I had three
leaf
clover.
You say burn a couple of things, what are we talking about?
Okay, that's different.
That's stress related.
We're going to go down the rabbit hole of that was a Jobu reference, not something else.
Yeah, I'm talking about all the things I needed to do to try to have success in the spiritual sense of
things. Gotcha. Understand. Okay.
All right, Kimasabe, we'll keep this moving on. There's an untapped market in the NFL, and it has found a home. And that is women who are finding a new love for the NFL.
Okay.
A lot of people are saying that has something to do with the Taylor Swift phenomenon. But Diana Rossini went on the Dan Le Batard show, and she feels that women in general just have a stronger appetite for football in 2024 than they did 20, 30, 40 years ago. And coincidentally or not, her new podcast with Chase Daniel, the former backup quarterback, is apparently tapping into a new market that is yet to be discovered. Women are channeling that podcast in record numbers, according to The Athletic, and supposedly the chill, comfortable vibe and the way that her and Chase break down the game and explain what's going on is really attracting a new genre of women.
So they play Nora Jones? They make out during this thing? How's this world? What goes on here, Carl?
I don't know. Apparently, it's a really good and easy, comfortable listen, and it's even gone a step further and inspired a whole new generation of young, aspiring women broadcasters that have taken to TikTok to break down the game of football for other women fans. Yeah, man, oh, man. Have you guys discovered in either one of your lives there's been a bigger female football presence?
Well, we found out a couple of years ago. I don't know. We don't have the breakdowns because we don't pay for the research like we used to, but it was 22% of our audience at one point was female.
Way to put the company on blast.
Well, I'm just telling you. It is what it is. I can't give you specifics in 2024. Now, the previous executive.
9-6 is ringing right now.
We used to get the information.
Yeah, I mean, the previous executive was very much into the big data.
Yes, he was.
But yeah, 22% of our audience at one point was female about 5 years ago, pre-COVID.
I will say this, and I don't know about you guys. My mom was a huge football fan. and this is prior to all the stuff that we have access to today, right? She pushed myself and my older brother to play. She was the one in the house that put the game on. It was always her. So I will tell you, I had that in my life from a female's perspective. And then, by the way, my sisters are there. We're all watching the game. Guess what? My sisters love football, too. So I can't tell you from my perspective that that's any different, but I get it. We have more things at our disposal now, Turtle, that people can put stuff out there and say, hey, I'm interested in this. I'm watching this. I'm paying attention. And women are doing more of that. But I from my perspective, all the women in my life have always loved football.
I just thought, you know, the NFL's always had, like, you know, NASCAR is like a big portion of NASCAR and racing is female viewership. Formula One viewership is a lot of part is female, thanks to Drive to Survive or Netflix. But, you know, getting back to football, I always thought football was always 50-50. It's in the Southeast. Growing up, Carl, I grew up in the Northeast. You go to a tailgate, you wouldn't see, you'd maybe see three women at a tailgate at the Meadowlands. You come to the South, it's a completely different animal. Everybody loves women, grow up with it in college game, Friday Night Lights, the whole shebang. So we're ahead of the curve on that here in the Southeast.
Yeah, and I think, too, what's now happening is women are taking a greater interest into some of the same things that we love about football. We were breaking down Kyle Pitts earlier and why he's not getting targets. There's now a sect of women who are getting interested in that side of the game as well. So it's cool to see.
Well, Becky and Sue, Drunk Larry's wife, they're in an all-women's fantasy football league. You know, there's all that kind of stuff to help drives interest.
Yeah, it's really cool stuff. All right, Big O, we got to run. Hit my music.
I like the fact that more women are paying attention, though. It's good. And the NFL loves it, too, by the way.
Right on.
Coming up, Barbara Dooley. Speaking of incredible women, our dog report is straight ahead. We will find out what she thought about taking the lead and then losing the lead. And now Auburn coming to Athens. Barbara Dooley is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.